Live from Texas, it's John Mayo with the Mayo Report.
The numbers we'll be talking about in this episode are for June 2008. We're going to be looking at the top 100 trades through Diamond to comic book retailers. With me, as always, for this is Chris Marshall, the Collected Comics Library. How you doing tonight, Chris?
I'm doing great, John. It's good to be here again.
Cool. We're getting a little bit of a late start on this because the numbers, of course, came out right after I left for San Diego. It's like, geez.
And how was San Diego, John?
It was good. It was fun. I did a lot of walking. My feet were killing me the entire time. I didn't do a whole lot of shopping. I did buy one trade. And, of course, that's
only
a trade.
Did you buy, let me guess, Commandy? Did you buy the Commandy?
No, that was actually for somebody else.
Okay, because you texted me the one day and wanted the Commandy information.
Yeah, I was hanging around with a guy who was looking for that because it was mentioned in Variety that day. And he's like, I got to get me this Commandy. I got to get me this Commandy. I'm like, well, it says various issues. Has this even been collected? I know. I'll call Chris.
Yeah.
So, of course.
What was Variety doing a story on Commandy?
It was one of 10 items they had in the article. I'm not even sure what the article was about. And it was the skimmed down version of Variety for Comic-Con.
Oh, okay. It wasn't, okay.
So.
That makes more sense.
But I since you told me they were the two hardcovers, found that on Amazon and sent it to a mutual friend of a friend, kind of, somebody who knew him, how to contact this guy.
There you go.
Because, again, I was just hanging around with him on the floor. Cool guy, though. Really cool guy. So hopefully he can get his Commandy fix and you know, be one with the post-apocalyptic world of Commandy, you know?
I also like the panel that you recorded for the comics podcasting panel. That was nice and crisp and clear version of the panel. So if anybody out there is listening and they want to listen to the panel with you and Bob and a whole bunch of other comics podcasters, your version is the best out there.
Cool. Thank you. I appreciate that. I try to do what I can for audio quality, and I was unsure how that one would turn out, but I think it turned out great, so I'm happy with it, too. It was a fun panel. That was one of two panels I went to in San Diego. I went to the Radical one and the one I was on. That was it. But that one trade I bought is also a trade sale that's never going to show up on the numbers we discussed because it was a face-to-face with the creator. So, once again, these are numbers that we're talking about through Diamond. And, you know, after coming out of San Diego, it's a real reminder that quite a bit of business happens outside of Diamond.
Right.
Both face-to-face with creators and through bookstores, et cetera, et cetera. And this particular trade was the demo trade from DC Vertigo, which, of course, was written by Brian Wood. And he was cool, autographed it for me and stuff. Really nice guy.
We've talked about Brian on the show before.
Yeah.
And he's a good man. I hope he comes on the show to pay us a visit, or even on your Comic Book Page podcast. That would be great.
I extended the invitation. Hopefully he'll take us up on it at some point. Right now, I would say he's one of the two heavy hitters for Vertigo, and Bill Willingham.
Or Jason Aaron, maybe.
Which titles is he doing these days for Vertigo?
Scalped.
The thing is, Brian Wood's doing a couple of titles, Bill Willingham doing a couple of titles, and those tend to be the better-selling titles for Vertigo. So while they've got some other people that are doing good work, they're not really kind of the anchor books that Vertigo is kind of in need of these days.
I'm just bringing up his name because Aaron's name was mentioned in the Eisner Awards. Scalped was nominated for a couple of Eisner Awards.
You know, it always disappoints me how some stuff will get nominated for an Eisner and it's clearly excellent material, and then I'll go look at the sales for it and I'm thinking, you know, people just aren't coming across this material.
Yeah.
And it seems like such a crime that such talented people are doing some great work. And it's I don't know if it's just the structure of the retail market, you know, with the pre-order stuff and, you know, the whole kit and caboodle with how the direct market is set up. But it just seems like there is a bigger audience for a lot of these things than, is able to get a hold of it and enjoy this material.
Well, I think you guys touched on that in your podcast. It's a great marketing outlet for these small press creators, but it's another outlet for these guys to get the word out about their projects. Like if podcasting wasn't around, there are so many titles that I wouldn't have picked up. And just recently, all the buzz about Lock and Key. I mean, boy, I'm so glad I found out about that. What a cool series that is.
Yeah. A lot of times it's just, again, like you were saying, finding out about the material to go hunt it down. Mm-hmm. So,
well, before we get to the numbers, I'm going to throw you a curve, and I want to talk briefly about what Marvel has been doing the past week. They've had two press releases. I want to get your thoughts on these. As you know, I'm a big believer in trade paperbacks and collected editions. And on July 31st, Marvel announced that they're going to collect the first three issues of Kick-Ass into its own little, 96-page book for $4.95. And now today, another press release has come out that Marvel 1985, the first three issues are going to be reprinted. But, oh, wait, there is going to be a regular edition and a variant edition to this little mini reprint. And I just want to get your thoughts on, where do these books get placed? Did they get placed as comics? Did they get placed as collected editions? Where would these, what is Marvel doing here when it's half of a trade anyway?
Well, let me address the question of where it'll fall on the charts first, because that's not really a Marvel issue. That's a Diamond issue.
Right.
And I think what's going to happen is they're going to flip a coin. There's no rhyme or reason to where they place some of this stuff, because this month, actually, Radical had a trade out that wound up in the book section. And, they're trying to, I was talking to one of their guys about it, and he's like, what happened to this? I'm like, I don't know, because at this point I'm sitting in my hotel room in San Diego not having looked at the numbers. But, he realized once he'd seen all the data that they just put it into the wrong category. So really, three issues is not enough to really qualify in my mind as a trade paperback. But if you look back historically, Marvel has done this sort of a thing where they'll take the first two or three issues of something, either reprint it as a Marvel must-have or something of that matter. And,
They did it with Thor. They did it with Brand New Day. I think they even did it for World War Hulk, or one of those.
It makes sense for them to do that because, particularly with something like Marvel 1985, where I think they kind of dropped the ball on the marketing. It was only in last month's previews where they started to point out, hey, this may tie in, or not may, but will tie in with the Old Man Logan story going on in Wolverine and what's going on in Fantastic Four right now.
Right.
And I was thinking, well, geez, if I knew that, I would have pre-ordered the first two issues. So, I wound up getting all these off the rack at a local store, which was not a big deal, but that's potential sales lost. And certainly, impacted the initial orders and initial reorder numbers that we Bob and I look at on the comic side. So
I guess what kills me with Marvel 1985 is it's a 6-issue limited series.
But by having these first three issues collected and out there in a timely manner, they can potentially get better sales on 4, 5, and 6.
Yeah, I guess it's a money grab for me. It comes across as a money grab.
They're a business. Of course it's
a
money grab.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with that to a certain degree. I mean, on the one hand, I also kind of agree with you entirely of it's 6 issues, just collect the whole damn thing. But, flip side, they got to make their money. And, when we look at how individual comics do and then the trade they get collected into, oftentimes there's at least a 10-to-1 difference. And, I mean that between any individual issue and the trade, much less all 5 or 6 component issues of a trade and that trade. And that's certainly true on the lower rung titles where some of these trades are doing good to sell 2,000 copies.
I guess another thing, and I was going to bring this up on my podcast, but it does make sense for Marvel to do this also, because if people don't get the first three issues, where are they going to go? They're going to go to eBay and they're going to give somebody else money. Well, this way Marvel can get their money from the consumers either way. This is an outlet for the consumer to go to Marvel instead of going to eBay.
Well, flip side, if they had gone straight to trade, you know, theory, the trade would have higher sales. I don't think it would have enough to justify not having done the individual issues. But if they can start to train people to go for original content trade paperbacks and stuff, there's certainly something to be said for that. Because in many cases, I mean, the typical life cycle for a comic, first issue does X. The next issue drops 22% thereabouts on average. Some more, some less. A few even go up. Very few, but you know what I mean. So on average. And then that third issue goes down by about another 11, 12%. Again, on average. You know, I'd have to go pull up my database and stuff to give you similar numbers for the drop for issue 4, 5, and 6. But what we're seeing is every subsequent issue is a jumping off point. Now, if you ship it all as one unit, either they buy it or they don't. But if they've bought it, they're not going to... Who cares if they read it all to a degree? You've sold the whole thing. Flip side, higher price point. These trades tend to sell less. It's a matter of can they shift the equation, can they shift the buying habits to where they're better off going direct to trade, particularly for a miniseries, and maybe, you know, doing a kind of a first issue preview kind of a thing. In other words, print a first issue and then go straight to the trade, letting people know up front that's what's going to happen. Maybe that would work. Maybe that would fail miserably. But, you know, in the meanwhile, I certainly don't fault them for collecting the three issues, trying to, particularly in the case of Marvel 1985, recoup from the misstep on the marketing. What was the other one you said they were going to do that with?
Well, Marvel must have the 85 one is going to be two covers also, which is interesting. And the other one was Kick-Ass.
That's another one that I think a lot of people didn't know what to make of initially. So, and I've read it. It's actually, you know, much, much better than I was expecting. I figured, oh, I'll try it, see, you know, how bad could it be kind of a thing. And I'm like, wow, this is actually kind of enjoyable. You know, it's a very dark, twisted story, but it's one of those where they take a look at, you know, kind of a real-world kid trying to be a superhero and just getting pummeled.
Right.
And it's like that could have gone really, really bad six ways to Sunday, but this was actually a entertaining take on it, and something that I think a lot of people just, again, didn't know what to make of it. They figured, oh, I'll wait for the trade, whatever. Again, this gives them a jumping on point. It allows them to potentially get on to the monthly title after that, and I think that can benefit everybody. Now, more so there, because I believe that's an ongoing series.
That is an ongoing series, right. And that's it makes more sense for an ongoing series to do a Marvel must-have, whether it be Kick-Ass or Thor or something like that. But for a limited series, a six-issue series, it's not even 12, it's a six-issue series, that just it leaves me puzzled, that's all.
But again, if that ties in, as they say it will, with Wolverine and Fantastic Four, they're looking at a title that they think is seriously underperforming. Or, you know, compared to how it could, in their minds, probably should be doing. Because if I pull up the numbers for that on the comic book side, and let me do that real quick. Let's see. It did, for issue 2, 40,114 units. That's down 27.23% from the first issue. So that's larger than average for a first issue drop, but nothing to panic about. And it started at 55,121 units. Now, compare that to Fantastic Four, which, again, it's going to somehow connect into, which is selling 60,973 units. And Wolverine, which the first part of that Old Man Logan storyline sold 97,978 units. So if this somehow becomes a key component of the bigger picture, you know, over, you know, well over half the readers of Wolverine and, you know, a third the readers of Fantastic Four are going to be, you know, scrambling to get copies that aren't out there at the stores to be had. Mm-hmm. So that kind of makes sense. But we'll see which list it winds up in and how well it winds up doing.
Okay, yeah, I just wanted to, you know, throw you a little curveball there. So
you like doing that, I know.
I know I do like doing that.
It keeps me on my toes, keeps me honest.
There you go.
Okay, shall we look at the breakdown of the top 100 trades?
Sure.
Okay, once again, this is the June numbers we're looking at, and we've got pretty clear Top Dog and two that are coming in, I don't want to say neck and neck, but reasonably close for second and third. Normally the Top Dog is Marvel. This time it's DC, though. DC had 34.35% of the units and 39.05% of the total dollars for the top 100 trades. Good, solid lead for DC there. Marvel came in second with 25.6% of the total units for the top 100 and 29.05% of the dollars. So about 10% behind on both. And then Dark Horse came in not that far behind from Marvel on the units with 23.04% of the units, but only 20.04% of the dollars. And that is a reflection of a lower average price and, just lower pricing in general, actually. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, with DC, they did 104,860 units compared to Marvel's 78,164 and Dark Horse's 70,341 units. So all of them did very well. Again, good, strong, top three positions there. And that accounts for just under 83% of the units for the top 100 trades. 82.99% to be a little more exact.
Not many reorder items this month.
No. And actually, it's funny. One of the things, and I'll go ahead and mention it now, that I wanted to point out was the reorder activity, and particularly for Dark Horse. We've talked a number of times about how a movie will come out, and it'll bump the trade for that movie. Wanted, Sin City,
Hellboy.
Well, Hellboy's the one actually I want to talk about, because we're seeing something very different here. But in a lot of cases, there's a specific trade that's the recipient of the bump. With Hellboy, we've got the first seven volumes showing up in the top 100 list this month. All of them are coming back for reorder activity on the strength of that movie coming out. This isn't a case of, gee, there's a Batman movie, so a Batman trade does well. Now, part of it is there's so damn many Batman trades, it's hard to pick kind of which would be the beneficiary. But for all seven of these trades to have gotten a bump from the movie, I see as very impressive. And now, granted, in some cases we're only talking 1,667 or so units. Again, these are estimated numbers, so there's a little bit of fudge factor of a couple of units here and there. And these are what's going into the stores. So clearly, stores were expecting people were going to go see that movie and think, gosh, I should go get one of these Hellboy trades, or potentially all seven of them. So to me, the fact that it bumped pretty much the entire line of trades, I see as a huge feather in the cap for Mike Mignola.
Yeah, that's really positive news, for sure.
Because, again, like we've been saying, typically what we'll see is a single trade that kind of bumps up. Again, 300, well, okay, there's the 300 trade, you get it, you're done. Watchmen, same thing. Sin City, okay, there's a couple of more trades. But, I don't recall any case where we've seen a movie come out and, again, the entire line pop up on the reorder list. So, I mean, that was a lot of what really helped Dark Horse this month. I mean, it had all seven Hellboy trades. It also had both of the Buffy trades showing back up. So, we need more movies to be doing that sort of activity. So, yeah, not much in the way of reorder activity. And the other thing that was kind of interesting is Red 5 comes out with its first trade paperback. It was the Atomic Robo trade, and that did an estimated 2,098 units, which for its first trade paperback, not a bad starting point.
Yeah, that's really good.
This is as well or better than a lot of Marvel and DC titles tend to do in trade.
Did you pick that one up?
I picked up in the monthly format, yes.
Okay.
So far, everything Red 5 is doing, I'm liking.
Really?
There's one title, Afterburn, which I think is the weakest of the lot, but still an enjoyable read. I'm really enjoying Atomic Robo. It's kind of a sci-fi take. What's the best way to phrase this? Imagine Hellboy, but take it out of kind of the supernatural thing and do a sci-fi variant of it. Mm-hmm. You get a similar kind of a vibe with Atomic Robo, at least I do. It's very well done. It's very entertaining. It's got kind of that same serious, not over-serious, humorous, not over-humorous kind of a tone to it that Hellboy can have at times. So again, Atomic Robo's great. I really like what they were doing, or continuing to do actually, on Neozoic. To me, that's probably their best book. It's just so different than everything else I'm reading. I'm just loving it. But right now, pretty much Red 5 would just have to say, hey, we're doing another comic, and just tell me the price, and I'd probably pick it up sight unseen. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the very few publishers that right now for me are at that point. Hmm. It's not that they can do no wrong, it's that they have done no wrong. Because give it time, sooner or later everybody makes a mistake. So, but those were the things that really kind of popped out at me on the breakdown of the top 100. Do you see anything else exciting there?
No, not really. Like I said, just the number of reorder items, 3 for DC, 3 for Marvel, the 9 for Dark Horse, and the 2 reorder for Image, and that's it. Not a whole lot.
Well, and again, just over half the reorder activity is Dark Horse.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that in of itself says a lot, particularly since 7 of those 9 items were Hellboy. Mm-hmm. So it was a good month for trades for Image. They came in with 8.09% of the units for the top 100 and 6.42% of the dollars. So distant fourth place from Dark Horse, but still, you know, over that 5% mark, and that's usually a good sign. So, to me, the big news in the actual list of the top 100 are the top 2 items.
Right, yeah, me too. I was going to mention that, yeah.
DC came out with a nice 1-2 punch of Why the Last Man and Fables, volume 10 of each. And, you know, Why the Last Man came in first place with an estimated 14,723 units. Fables Volume 10 came in second place, just a little bit behind that, at 13,158 units. Strong orders, strong numbers for both of those. You know, these are both very strong titles, and this is the last trade for Why the Last Man, so they're going to have to, you know, be banking on how those hardcovers do, and I'm going to help with that. I've already ordered the first. But, I mean, this is one of the things that, to me, is what really is putting Bill Willingham as, you know, a key player for Vertigo. Is, you know, he comes out with something, and it's one of their top trades, you know. And, again, I go back to him and Brian Wood are probably, you know, the two most important guys creatively right now at Vertigo. Now, Vertigo's got a lot of titles out there. They've got a lot of strong creators, but those are the ones that are really, you know, kind of the heavy hitters at the moment, sales-wise. And, again, we're looking at what's in the channel just through Diamond. Some of these things are going to be doing gangbusters outside of the Diamond stuff, both through convention sales, through bookstores, and, you know, overseas printings and stuff like that. Now, what I found very interesting about both of these Why the Last Man and Fables trades, they outsold Walking Dead. Walking Dead had a new trade come out, Volume 8. It came in third place. Now, a very strong third place with 13,036 units, so only about 122 copies shy of that Fables volume. But typically when Walking Dead comes out, it's the top-selling book. Mm-hmm. Now, certainly I don't think this is anything to worry about because, again, this is, you know, strong sales for it. But I think we may be hitting the point where, not that it's hit a saturation point, but, you know, it's, I don't know how much better its trades can start opening.
Who, Walking Dead?
Walking Dead, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's gotten the awareness out there. Kirkman's now partner at Image, and again, I think a lot of that's due specifically to Walking Dead, as well as his other titles. But it's one of those where, you know, I'm wondering if we're getting to the point where it's going to start peaking out a little in sales, if only because of you know, how many people tend to buy non-Marvel and DC titles. So certainly I don't think that, again, there's no cause for alarm here, but it's certainly something to be watching.
Well, going back to Why the Last Man, I wouldn't be surprised when the hardcover comes out if that's not, you know, in the top 5 or even number 1 when it comes out October 15th.
I certainly think that's possible. I'm curious how many people who have either the trades or the monthly issues or potentially both are also going to be picking up that hardcover,
yeah,
or that series of hardcovers, because it got great word of mouth through the entire run of the series. Mm-hmm. So it's certainly something that, you know, going to, again, a better format could do very well for them.
Yeah, I'll be picking it up for the first time in hardcover format. So.
Same here. I never got on it on either the monthlies or the trades. I'd been thinking about doing the trades, but just, you know, never got around to it now.
Well, yeah, I was going to do the trades, you know, when the series is wrapping up, and I'm like, oh, everybody's really talking about it, and I'm like, oh, okay, well, I'll pick it up, and then, you know, DC has the solicits, and it's coming out in hardcover. I'm like, oh, okay, I'll just wait.
Yeah.
I'll get the hardcover. It's going to be, you know, two trades in one hardcover, essentially. So, you know, $5, that'll be no problem to pick up.
Exactly, exactly. Now, I think it was also a good move for them to wait until they had the entire run of trades out before going to hardcover.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, I really question the strategy that some of the publishers have of... it seems like they flip a coin as to determine if it comes out first in trade or hardcover, and then the other one follows suit really quickly thereafter.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that all you're doing is dividing your customer base that way, and, you know, that can't help the sales on any version of the product.
Mm-hmm.
Now, going down to rank number 4, we get to Marvel's first entry on the list with Astonishing X-Men Volume 4. And this, again, trade paperback. It did 9,197 units. Again, not bad. It's about half the total known sales for, I guess, Volume 2 is what my database pulled up. I'm not sure why it didn't grab number 3. Certainly, there's room for this to grow long-term on the shelf. Again, a lot of these trades have longer shelf lives than monthly and stuff. But what's interesting to note is we've dropped nearly 4,000 units between ranks 3 and 4. You know, this is where in many months the list starts to pick up, topping up at, you know, actually a little below this. In many months it would top out around where the rank 5 item came in, which was Umbrella Academy Apocalypse Suite from Dark Horse, and that did 7,682 units. Again, in many months that would have been the top slot. And to me, you know, when I see this kind of juxtaposition within just the first top 5 items, you know, clearly there's, you know, a larger base of readers that are looking for trades, as we're seeing with Walking Dead, Fables, and Why the Last Man, that most trades aren't able to tap into that audience. And I certainly don't think it's because, well, everyone's getting these other titles in the monthly format or whatever, because the numbers don't really seem to bear that out. You know, I think a lot of this starts to get into the point where the waiting for the trade mentality kicks in and people say, well, you know, I've waited this long, I can get it next week or the week after, or, you know, there's no incentive to get the trade the week it comes out or the month it comes out.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why from here down, it's not going to be but another, you know, dozen or so ranks before we start getting below 4,000, and then not much further before we're below 3,000. You know, the units start to get shallower pretty quick, which again I see as unfortunate, but also a sign of just how many trades are coming out every month, you know, trades or hardcovers for that matter. Let's see, rank 6, we've got All-Star Batman and Robin the Boy Wonder Volume 1 hardcover. It did 7,286 units. That title on the monthly side has slipped back into perennial lateness. I believe they've just canceled orders for 2 or 3 of the issues.
Oh, I didn't hear that. That's not good news.
It happens.
Huh.
You know, I don't know how much of that is Jim Lee also working on the DC Online game, or exactly what the problem might be, but, you know, I'm not expecting that second hardcover to come out anytime soon based on that. So, you know, and it's funny because DC has proven with Trinity, with Countdown, with 52, they can get the books out on time.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, with certain titles, certain creators, it seems to be much harder for them to do that.
Well, then they said All-Star Wonder Woman was going to be coming out. I mean, that was 2 years ago, you know, but that's not happening.
I heard one comment, and this was years ago at San Diego. It might have been the Trade Expo beforehand.
Uh-huh.
And I think it was Bob Wayne, but it may not have been. I think it was, though. And it was basically along the lines of, if we didn't solicit it, and therefore it didn't have an expected ship date, it's not late.
Yeah,
or
that's true.
If they ship it when it was supposed to ship, even though it was, you know, a year after the fact, but, you know, they just didn't solicit for that year. And it's like, you know, technically that's 100% correct. I can't fault them for that in terms of they set expectations, they met expectations. Flip side, if you say something's going to be a monthly book, that too is setting expectations, and it's realistic for retailers and readers to expect it to come out reasonably close to monthly.
Right.
You know, and so far, All-Star Batman and Robin, not quite doing that. Now, whenever they say, hey, they're going to launch a title like the All-Star Wonder Woman, I really don't pay a whole lot of attention until I see that first solicitation.
Right, exactly, yeah.
You know, it's...
But it's so nice to talk about rumors, though.
Oh, yeah, I mean, we're comic fans. That's what we do.
Exactly, yeah.
All right, next up in slot 7, we've got Marvel Zombies Volume 2 hardcover. It did 6,982 units, which is reasonably strong sales. It'll be interesting to see if this pops up over the coming months like the first volume did. Kind of suspect it won't.
Yeah.
Now,
well, this is actually the fourth, when you look at it, this is the fourth Marvel Zombies hardcover, if you include Army of Darkness and Dead Days.
Right.
Well, so people are getting zombied out. There's going to be a Volume 3 coming out.
I was just going to mention that. That's just been solicited. So, you know, it's... It'd be interesting to see when they finally, you know, kind of, you know, kill it off and be done with it.
Yep.
Let's see. Rank number 8, we've got Green Lantern Volume 2, the Sinestro Corps War hardcover. Now, that one had a price tag of $24.99, which, that's not too bad, I guess. See, I don't know, it just feels a little expensive.
I said it on my podcast, and I think I might have said it here, it's too bad they didn't collect all three of these hardcovers into one massive hardcover. That would have been, you know, for like $50 or even $60 as a sort of absolute edition. But,
yeah,
you know, that would have been nice.
Well, this one did 6,396 units. Now, for comparison, that first volume, the total known sales are 9,331 units. So that's about a 2,935 copy gap. Now, again, that first volume has had many, many months to go accumulate those sales, whereas this is just the opening numbers for Volume 2. But it does kind of, you know, make you wonder, if they had done it in one shot, where would those sales have wound up, and would they have, you know, gotten more readers than they've lost between the two, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that's there's really no way to know for sure. Let's see, what else do we got? And let's see, number 9, we've got Captain America, Death of Captain America trade paperback at 5,848 units. And he's still dead. oh, you laugh now, but sooner or later I'm going to say, ha, he's back.
He's back.
It's
right.
Just a matter of time. But, you know, I got to say, Brubaker is telling a hell of a story. If you have,
I love it, yeah.
I've been a fan of Cap for decades. I've probably got more Captain America comics than any other title in my collection. And, I mean, I go back to, you know, only about the 70s or stuff. I'm not going to say I go way the hell back, but for me, that's a ways. This is some of the best Captain America stuff I've ever read, and I really enjoyed various, you know, points in the run. So anyone who likes the character at all or is just doubtful that a good story could be told with the character, I really recommend picking up Brubaker's run of Cap. And I would go so far as to say, while you don't have to start at the beginning of his run with it, it really builds and builds and builds over that run.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in that respect, this 5,848, you know, units, good sales, but compared to how strong I think that material is, this is one that I do kind of think is underperforming. You know, this is, out of all of what Brubaker's doing right now, I think some of his, you know, by far his best work. I think if stores were to push it a little bit more, if they were to get it into the hands of the right readers and stuff, there's no reason this couldn't be doing two or three times what it's doing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I find that frustrating because I don't fault the way Marvel's marketing it. I think they could do a little stronger push, but I don't know that they're doing anything really wrong, just nothing really strong in terms of marketing it. Mm-hmm. I don't really fault the retailers, because presumably they're ordering what they think they can sell, and I certainly don't expect every retailer to be an advocate for every comic and every trade out there. But again, there are a couple that, you know, and this is one of them, I don't know why it can't be selling more. And I don't know kind of the, again, I don't want to say where the blame should be placed, because I don't think it's a matter of blame or whatever, but where the shortcoming is in the current way the direct market works, that it's not getting into to more hands and just selling better.
Well, you can say the same thing about Daredevil, too. I mean, both Cap and Daredevil are outside of the big events that have been going on for the past couple years at Marvel. Not really Cap, but now it is. Now Cap is. You know, they're not. Bucky is not involved in Secret Invasion really whatsoever. And Daredevil's kind of off in his little own world, doing what he does. But those two books are, you know, really the only two books that I get out of Marvel. You know, save for the Punisher books, but boy, they are just the best books out these days, I think. Superhero books out these days, I think.
I think out of those two, though, while Daredevil is indeed a very strong title, I think Captain America is a more iconic character.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
A more accessible character. And it's got, I don't want to say kind of a Tom Clancy-ish feel to it. Mm-hmm. It's something that I think would be an easier sell to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And I really hope that when the Captain America movie comes out next year, year after, whenever it comes out, that we see the bump on Brubaker's run of Cap that we're seeing this month with Hellboy. Because I really think that if you can get people excited about the character, that there's just a wealth of very satisfying stories and trades to give them, to keep them hooked.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see how that does when that movie comes out, and if they're able to, you know, if Brubaker can stay on Cap that long and keep it as exciting as he is now, I mean,
oh boy, that'd be great.
You would just have this you know, shelf worth of outstanding material. So we'll.
I think everybody is kind of waiting to see how long he can keep Steve Rogers out of the picture. You know, how long can he keep us going with the title Captain America? It's almost like a game now. Now it's been over a year.
Well, it's, you know, to a degree, I got to wonder if that's part of why the title is working.
Yeah.
Because part of what I think works with Walking Dead is the way Kirkman just toys with the readers.
Yeah.
And to a degree, that's exactly what Brubaker's doing with the, hey, I can keep him dead a little bit longer, just watch me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he's telling, again, a brilliant story, again, where the title character's been dead going on, what, 15 issues now.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's done it this long. There's no reason he can't do it for another couple of years if he wants
another
to.
Another 15 at least.
Yeah. So.
And it's not like the story is slow. It's moving at a very good pace where, you know, it tells, like, it's an espionage. It's like you said, it's like a Tom Clancy where you want to turn the page and get to the next chapter because it's just moving at that rapid pace. It's really not letting up.
He does a good job of having enough plot points per issue to keep you interested, keep you coming back. And that's something.
Yeah, and he's settling plot points along the way, too. He's not like giving you a big tease and at the end of the story arc. I mean, so far, what are they on, their third story arc right now?
Thereabouts, yeah.
And for me, it's been one story arc. It's not been three. It's just been, you know, Winter Soldier and Sharon Carter and Red Skull, they've all just been one fluent story, really, for me.
Well, again, since this run of Captain America started, everything has flowed so well from that beginning through to where it is now. So with the right number of twists and turns, nice, good packaging points to fit into a trade, yet not a the end and beginning of new story next issue.
Right.
You know, it's accessible without those speed bumps that you typically get between trade paperback breaks.
Right.
So I really think that there's a lot to be learned about storytelling for comics from his run on Captain America. I think to a lesser degree that could probably be said about Daredevil, but for me, there have been a couple of points where Daredevil is just, it loses me. It doesn't keep me as hooked, whereas there hasn't been a single moment in Captain America where I'm thinking I'm getting a little bit bored at all. I'm just constantly, you know, in the story, excited about the story, waiting to see what happens next. And again, you know, I feel that way, and then I see these numbers, and I think, you know, if everybody else could experience this, they'd keep buying this. So, but that's my usual frustration looking at these numbers. You know, because there's sometimes I could say, okay, I could see where this is maybe overselling or underselling, whatever, but there are few where I think it's such a clear case of unrecognized quality or underappreciated quality. Because I'll admit, there are a lot of things I like that maybe not so great, but that happens. And rounding out the top 10, we've got Invincible number 9, volume 9, trade paperback from Image with 5,613 units. This is another one of Robert Kirkman's titles, and it is actually up by 379 units from the total known sales of Volume 8. So this is another one that, you know, is kind of bucking the odds to a degree. And again, that 8th issue has had a good couple of months to accumulate more sales, yet out of the gate, number 9's beaten it. Now, I kind of think that Invincible really started strong with the first and particularly the second trade. It's been enjoyable throughout, but hasn't had kind of that pushing the envelope, constant edge of my seat kind of a thing that I've gotten either in, again, Captain America or Walking Dead. So I'll be honest, I'm a little surprised that number 9 started out higher than number 8 has gotten, but I think it's justified. It's a good title, you know. And again, this goes back to, you know, Image making Kirkman a partner. Mm-hmm. To me, that was a brilliant move for Image to do. That I see as a fundamental turning point for that company, because it went from, I don't say a good old boy network or whatever, but the founding fathers, to almost being like a law firm where, hey, you get the top-selling book, or you start, you know, really bringing in the bucks for your titles through Image, you get rewarded.
Well, not only that, with Kirkman stepping up and then Larson stepping down, so to speak, as editor-in-chief, you know, so you've had two big moves there, really.
Well, and I think Larson made the right choice to go back to doing his books. I mean, that seems to be what he's really interested in doing. And really, the production schedule for Savage Dragon just got toasted by him being editor-in-chief for Image.
Right.
So if he can get his own book back on track, that'd be great. And if Kirkman can bring in other creators and kind of revitalize the Image Central line, everybody wins from that. You, me, Image, Marvel, DC, everybody. Because you look at a lot of the powerhouse people at Marvel and DC these days, a lot of them came up through the ranks through independent comics. You know, quite a few of them through Image. So having that, not really a feeder system for the talent, not a training ground for the talent, but a proving ground, it just makes sense. So I'm really looking forward to what Kirkman may be able to do with Image and how that all pans out. It could be the shot in the arm that I think Image really needs, both creatively and just as a company. They're doing some good stuff, but I see so many of their titles selling so much lower than I think they should be.
Yeah, I don't want to say they're underperforming, underachieving, but they've got a lot more potential than what is, you know, being portrayed, I think.
Well, and to me, this is a matter of kind of underperforming, but through no fault of the creator or the title. It's just getting the word out to the right people to buy it. I think there's a bigger audience out there for almost every book under the sun. Maybe not for the top, you know, selling books that are doing that 250,000 copies or whatever. But for certainly the ones that are doing the under 5,000, the under 3,000, that I think are solid, good storytelling, if that's the full potential market for those books, or for books of any sort out there, we should just fold up shop as a hobby and call it a night. You know, because I think there are more than that number of people podcasting about comics than are buying some of these comics. You know, and I certainly don't expect everybody to buy everything, but there comes a point where I gotta wonder how a mainstream DC book can sell under 10,000 units. How a competently and professionally and entertainingly well-done Image title can sell under 4,000. You know, there's only so much lower it can go before it's, you know, the readers start producing comics to give to the creators, you know?
Right.
It's just, it's nuts at times. So, once we get down past rank 12, we drop below 5,000. Once we get past rank 17, we drop below 4,000. And once we drop below rank 30, we get below 3,000. So the majority of these trades are only moving a few thousand units. Now, again, these are initial numbers just for 1 month. Some of these start piling up. One of them that's piled up is in rank 26. That, of course, is Watchmen. It moved another 3,212 units, giving it known sales through the direct market of at least 76,512 units. Now, again, this is a trade that's over 20 years old. The top 100 list originally was a top 10 list, so there were 90 items that we would have been getting now that we weren't getting on it back then, and you got to imagine Watchmen was one of them. So this is a drop in the bucket compared to how it's moved just through Diamond. And to put this into context of the bigger picture, DC has reportedly shipped more than 300,000 copies of the graphic novel to stores, and I'm unclear if it's mass market stores, presumably it is, just in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, isn't that insane?
It's awesome.
Yeah.
You know,
I mentioned on my show, I was wondering if they were going to drop the price, because I think the trade is at $19.95 or something like that, and if they're shipping that many, maybe they're going to drop the price down to as low as $10, but it doesn't seem like they're going to do that. They're going to keep it at the $20 price.
I think they should keep it at the $20 price.
Yeah.
Because it would set expectations of, well, I paid $10 for this, I should only be paying $10 for other stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and they should really be taking the advantage of being able to do the larger print run, getting the lower printing costs, making some more money on this, whatever, to, I don't want to say shore up the rest of the publishing and whatnot, but to give them the cushion they may need or whatever to really push appropriate titles to the same audience.
Yeah.
Because I think people who like Watchmen, there's no reason they wouldn't like something like Fables, Why the Last Man.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of these other books that DC is coming out with, both through Vertigo, through the DCU, through through Wildstorm even. So, I mean, if
Well, my logic was, if they're going to print that many, you know, you want them all to be sold, and you'd want the mainstream audience, whether they go to the mass market, to have the incentive to pick it up. So maybe the book market will be smart and, you know, give 15% off the book or something like that. Have some kind of sale just so it doesn't sit around.
Well, the worst thing that could happen for DC is for a large percentage of these units to get shipped back as returns.
Exactly. That's my point. Right. Yeah.
I agree that, you know, is a concern, hopefully not a huge one, and hopefully it doesn't happen, but we've heard of cases where various smaller publishers have had to have fire sales because of, you know, hey, we've just gotten all these returns dumped on us. We're about to go under. You know, certainly that's not going to happen with DC. I mean, I'm not trying to imply that it would. But, you know, 6 months, a year from now, it could be a nasty, you know, dent in their bottom line or whatever if it happens at an inopportune time.
Yeah.
Hopefully the stores, I mean, and again, this is many months before the movie even hits the theaters. So hopefully they'll hang on to it through when the movie comes out. Hopefully they'll hang on to it, any copies they still have past that. And who knows, maybe they're going to blow through all these and have to get another couple hundred thousand. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, I have to get a new copy, actually. I mean, I got my Absolute version, but my paperback version is pretty beat up, you know, because I've had it for years and years and years, and I always pick it up, and you know, it's all dog-eared, and you throw it in the back of your trunk, and it's a beater copy is what I have. I got a beater copy for Crisis and a beater copy for Watchmen, and it's kind of fun that you can beat up a copy like that and not even worry about it, because you can always go get the trade if you need a new copy, and I think I do need a new copy, because I even have, like, notes written in the margin. You know, I grab a pen or a pencil, and I'm like, oh, remember this, or refer back to this page, or refer to this character, because there's so many things that go on, especially in Crisis, too. My God. You know,
I draw the line at taking notes while reading a comic.
No, but you could do that with any book, though. You know,
you could. I don't. I'm sorry, I didn't do that in college. What the hell makes you think I'm going to do this for entertainment?
Yeah, well, that's when you should do it. You should do it in your textbooks.
Well, right? that was my point. Now, I'll certainly concede that both Watchmen and Crisis have the depth that there's stuff you could, I don't want to say excavate out of it, but there's deeper stuff to be had beyond just the surface level. Mm-hmm. You know, certainly there's, particularly for Watchmen, I'm not going to claim to have gotten the full Watchmen experience out of my reading.
No.
Because I read it when it first came out in the monthly format. I was much younger, much lazier, much stupider, whatever you want to call it. I should reread it, and I'm sure I'd get a lot more out of it. But, you know, I read for entertainment. I don't read for memorization, for trivia games, or for taking notes.
I mean, I guess it just started happening because I kept on referring. I'm like, what was going on here? So I just grabbed a pencil or a pen and just started going at it. And it was like, especially more for Crisis, you know, who is this character again? What Earth are they on kind of thing? And, you know, that's primarily why I did it.
Now, I didn't have any problem remembering who was on what Earth and stuff, but, you know, I had been...
There's a billion characters in it, and I'm like, who? You know,
what? Yeah, well, I'd been so entrenched in the DC...
I don't know the Legion that well either, so...
I was so entrenched in the DC multiverse at that point, it was no big deal for me.
Yeah.
I will say, rereading Crisis a year or two back... in the Absolute Edition and stuff, was a great experience. Because, again, that was one I read month to month. And reading it pretty much all in one sitting, there were a lot of things where the twists and turns, you know, it's like, oh, wow. It read a lot better in one sitting than I thought it would. I was afraid it was not going to hold up.
Yeah.
I also recommend the paperback novel that Marv Wolfman did.
Yeah, you mentioned that. I have a copy of that. I've never read that, though, but I've got a copy. And you know what? I gave the copy away in a contest. I don't have it anymore.
Oh, for shame.
Yeah, I did.
I can't believe... You should get another copy.
I should get a copy. Is it in hardcover only, or is it in trade?
Paperback,
I should say.
I know it's in hardcover. I should be in trade by now, but I honestly can't tell you off the top of my head.
Yeah, I should pick up a copy.
It was...
Because that was done from the Barry Allen's perspective.
Exactly. It was done from Barry Allen's perspective, so it's timely now.
Perez wrote it, or Wolfman wrote
it.
Wolfman wrote it, yeah. So that'd be a good one to have.
It was one of those things that, just as I was afraid that the 12-issue series wouldn't hold up in you know, rereading it 20 years later in one sitting, I wasn't sure it could be novelized worth a damn. But Marv Wolfman proved me wrong. And more power to him. That was awesome.
And he would know.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he'd be the guy to do it. So
it was definitely worth reading.
Well, real quick, we mentioned movie Bumps and Hellboy at the beginning of the show tonight. And I think a few other books that kind of got bumps that are reprints are the Indiana Jones Adventures coming in at number 15 and the Indiana Jones Omnibus, also from Dark Horse, coming in at number 21.
Right, yeah.
Which I don't know. I've got the first Omnibus of Indiana Jones. I don't know if that holds up as well. You know, the adventure book was kind of fun. I mean, it had that Cartoon Network vibe to it. You know, the same guys who did the Clone Wars did it. And but the Omnibus, man, I don't know. You know, I have to pick up Volume 2 to see how well that goes, but I don't know. But are you a big Indiana Jones fan or pick these books up?
I saw the movie. I also picked up the 2-issue series. Did that the day before the Comic-Con, actually. I was going to get the trade, but then the lady at the store mentioned they still had the 2 issues. Like, okay, I'll get those.
Yeah.
I haven't read it yet, but it's written by John Jackson Miller, so I'm expecting great stuff from that. I like Indiana Jones just fine. I have never really gotten into the comics for him, though.
Yeah.
It's one.
Dark Horse has the reprint rights for the Marvel issues, and rumor has it they're going to be doing what they did with Star Wars and putting those into trade paperback as well, which that would be kind of cool to have. You know, then you'd have really everything Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
There weren't a whole lot. I mean, maybe they're going to start reprinting the Young Indiana Jones comics. But to have the Marvel issues, that's kind of that one. What, 35 issues? Maybe a little bit more.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, that was a decent series for what I remember. Another book I wanted to bring up real quick is Conan Born on the Battlefield. This came in at number 35 in softcover, John, and it is also on your list at number 61 in hardcover. Got any comments on that?
And let's see, the softcover did 2,802, the hardcover did 1,990. So that's one where if you put those two together, you would have had... Oh, great. I got to do math now. You really like throwing me, don't you? 4,792 units, which would have placed it at rank 13.
Yeah.
So, again, literally splitting their sales. I'm not surprised the softcover did better. It's $17.95 versus that hardcover at $24.95.
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised they both came out pretty much concurrently. I don't have the actual ship week for those.
I can get that for you real quick. Let me look it up.
I'm really curious if they came out the same week.
Let's see here. I have June 4th for the... Oh, they came out together. Same day, June 4th.
Really? Interesting.
Yes.
Okay, because if one had come out before the other, then people might have said, well, I just don't want to wait. Okay, but if they came out the same day, and they did, that means that a lot of people gravitated towards the softcover because it's cheaper. That makes sense. But that means the buyers seem to prefer the hardcover to the softcover. Now, that kind of makes sense to me because the hardcover is generally seen as kind of the quote-unquote better format. Mm-hmm. But it really surprises me they came out with both at the same time. It seems to me that the smarter move might have been to come out just with a hardcover at first. Doing so, you probably would have gotten at least another 500 to 1,000 units of sales. 3 to 6 months down the line, probably 6 months, do that soft cover. It probably still would have done almost on par with how it did. I really doubt you would have lost a whole lot in the way of readers. So I would love to know what the thinking was at Dark Horse behind this move. Mm-hmm. Because it just seems like such a clear case to me of splitting your audience. And again, in this case, not that... I mean. Yes, it cost them being at rank 13, but frankly, that's worthless. That means nothing. They sold the units they sold. So I just, yeah. It always surprises me when people say, well, this is the top item, therefore it must be the best. You know, it's like, top item that month.
Right, right.
The ranks are so relative, it doesn't matter. But I don't understand their rationale behind it, and I would like to.
When you get a collected edition, would you like to have the hardcover before the trade? I mean, if you're a retailer or a company, what would you like to publish first?
It depends on the nature of the product. If it is something that I think has literally a fairly infinite shelf life, and by that I mean something that you have reasonable expectations will continue to sell through the long haul to a meaningful degree, mm-hmm. I would want to go with the trade first. I would do the trade, I would do the hardcover, I would do the absolute. Just like we're seeing with things like Walking Dead, that we've seen with Crisis, we've seen with Watchmen. Because those are things that people will eventually upgrade their format.
Right.
You know, it worked with New Frontier. Mm-hmm. With those types of properties, if you were to start out with the absolute or whatever, it's like, nah, I don't want to pay that much. You know, I can wait for the hardcover. People see the hardcover, oh, I can wait for the trade. You know what I mean? So you wind up delaying the purchase, and every time you do that, the next version becomes that much less likely. Mm-hmm. And you certainly don't get the repeat sales. Once somebody has the hardcover, there's no real need for them to get the trade usually.
Right.
Okay? Once somebody has the absolute, there's no, or omnibus, or you know that uber deluxe edition, there's no need for just a hardcover. There's no need for just a trade.
Yeah, anybody who, for a good example, anybody who got the Howard the Duck omnibus now, you know, why would you even bother go out if you're the owner of that book? Why would you go get the essential?
Exactly.
Right.
But if you had the essential, you might
move
up.
You might, or if you didn't know anything about the character or wanted to learn more, the essential is a great vehicle for that.
Right. Flip side, if you've got something where you want to strike while the iron is hot and you think 6 months from now nobody's going to give a damn about this property, then it makes sense to go for the hardcover first. Mm-hmm. Go for the cash grab, get the money while you can if you think that's the smart move.
Well, that's what Marvel does with their premier hardcovers, it seems. You know, they're willing to throw anything in that premier hardcover format and see if it sticks.
Well, and again, these are a lot of things that a year later... Do most people remember the title?
No. I mean, a good one for me that comes to mind is the Storm 6-issue mini.
I knew you were going to pull that one up.
Yeah, because I always pull it up. I think that series was ridiculous to begin with, and they pulled it at a premier hardcover, you know. And I remember Derek Howard telling me, oh, that was a pretty good series. I'm like, whatever.
It was a perfectly fine series. It didn't need to be in hardcover, but
that's my point. Yeah,
half this stuff doesn't, you know.
Right.
I would say half this stuff doesn't need to be collected.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, down at rank 91, we've got Shadow Pack Volume 3, Light, Darkness and Light, and that collects what issues does that collect?
Shadow Pack one.
That covers 14 through 19, so it's got one more trade before that series ends. And that trade sold 1,467 units. There's never going to be a hardcover of this. There's never going to be an absolute of this.
No.
Nor should there be. It was a fine series. It was not horrible, whatever, but...
Well, you bring up a good point, though. What if somebody is out there and they solely get the trade paperbacks, right? And they pick up Shadow Pack Volumes 1, 2, and 3 and trade, and the series is canceled, and DC decides, yeah, you know what? We're not even going to bother collecting this for a fourth trade paperback. And so that person that is collecting Shadow Pack is stuck, basically.
I would argue that they're not collecting Shadow Pack. I think they're just getting the trades. And to me, there's a definite distinction there, and I think it's really proven by Gotham Central on how various issues were skipped because they were kind of standalone in between.
Well, Starman was the same way.
Yeah.
Right?
So if you are, you know, and part of this is my own bias, and I certainly don't mean to be putting anyone down when I say these comments because I fully believe that people should read comics in the format they want to, when they want to, how they want to, for whatever reason they want to. I got no issue with anyone's buying decisions, but certain things don't make sense to me just because of the way I'm hardwired or whatever. But for somebody to say, this is my favorite series, I'm collecting it in trade, and then kind of follow it up with and I haven't gotten one in a year and a half. How on earth could this be your favorite comic if you haven't read it for that long?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, if you are so gung-ho about this, how can you wait the 6 months or however long it is between collected installments to be getting it? Now, certainly, part of the answer to that is some stories read much better in one sitting. And if you're going to do that, yes, it makes sense to get the collected edition. I get that. I understand that. But again, there's so many of these that read so well in a monthly or periodical format.
You think so?
Captain America for me.
Yeah, but Captain America is one of those that transcends both, I think.
True. There are a lot of things that probably read better in trade than in the periodical format, but if that's the case, then and they're writing it for that trade, they should be publishing it in that trade and skipping the periodical to begin with. Otherwise,
there's another argument altogether we could go into.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know? I mean, otherwise, the periodical readers are just subsidizing the trade, and that's unfair.
Right.
I don't know. It just in the case of something like Shadow Pack, if they were to choose not to do a fourth, and let's face it, they probably will do a fourth. We're not suggesting otherwise. And somebody's only getting it in the trade, and they're thinking, well, gee, I'm going to lose out on the ending of the story. It's like, well, you should have got the damn issues to begin with. You know, if you had, maybe the story wouldn't be ending.
Yeah, if you like the series that much, you may want to, you know the trades are going to probably come out eventually. You know it's going to come out in periodical form, so you might as well pick it up, especially if you hear rumors on the message boards that it may get canceled. You know, better start getting the issues now.
Now, I have heard the argument that readers should not have to, you know, support the industry in like a welfare kind of a manner or what have you. And, you know, yeah, I kind of see that too. You know, if Shadow Pack and I'm just using Shadow Pack as an example. I am not, again, referring to this necessarily specifically, but if there is a title that ends because too many people are getting it in trade, not enough are getting it in the monthly, is that the reader's fault? Well, I mean, arguably yes, because that's how they're buying it, but really, no, because the publisher made the choice to not get the periodical version and the choice to get the collected edition so viable for them to do.
Well, not only that, but I think buyers have to beware, in using that old line, that they should go in with an expectation that the title may get canceled someday. You know, like a Shadow Pack, like a Checkmate, like a Nova. I mean, Nova's still hanging on, I think, isn't it?
It's doing pretty well, 28,878 units.
Yeah, but so. I mean, not every title is going to get up to 500 like X-Men, or even to 100 or 150 like Nightwing. You know, it's very rare, you know?
Well, what gets me is there's a rumor that a DC title is getting cut from 6 issues to 3.
Really?
It's Family Dynamic, which is one of the Johnny DC titles, I think.
Okay.
I don't even think the first issue's come out. Maybe it has. I'm behind on my reading. But if so, only the first issue has come out. I certainly haven't seen any numbers for it. And here's one where, again, you know, is 3 issues enough for a trade? Why not? I mean,
well, Marvel must have. You can always do that.
And not for a DC title. It just wouldn't work.
Yeah, that's true. DC must have.
So there comes a point where, you know, should the publisher be expected to eat the loss if something really underperforms or tanks or just isn't viable to you know, produce at least a break-even point? But, you know, again, I look at some of the sales figures, and I don't mean to harp on DC. DC is telling some great stories, doing some good stuff, but, you know, when you've got, again, a mainstream DC Universe book selling under 10,000, units, I got to think something somewhere is wrong.
Right.
You know, when you've got a lot of them selling under 20,000, or at least too many, I should say. I mean, it's only probably a half dozen or whatever, but still. You know, are there that few comic book readers out there? And then I look at the kind of a quarter million that, you know, a Secret Invasion number one sort of comic can sell, and I think there's a few more comic readers out there than a lot of titles are hitting.
Yeah. I also think that many titles or many characters should be they should only be like in a 5-issue miniseries or 6-issue miniseries. I mean, you know, one that comes to mind, I think, is Aquaman. I think Aquaman, it starts up and ongoing every couple years, and it gets canceled. And, you know, it does it again, gets canceled. You know, that's a good character that could do a 6-issue miniseries, you know, once every 18 months or something like that, and have him in the DC. And Martian Manhunter is the same way. I mean, if you look at what Marvel's done with Silver Surfer over the past couple years, keeping him only in these short little miniseries, I think it's done very well for that character.
Well, I think DC's in a unique position that Marvel is not. And I've said this a number of times. I'll say it a number of times in the future, no doubt. They should be doing a weekly book, kind of like they've been doing with 52 Countdown and now Trinity. And what they should be doing is they should be taking characters like Aquaman, Atom, Firestorm, Hawkgirl, Hawkman.
Yeah, the Ray.
The Ray. All of these that are almost able to support a series but not quite. Toss them into a year-long weekly thing that intertwines. Have somebody like Dwayne McDuffie, who's a great underrated writer.
Well, no, wait a minute. Didn't they do this with Brave and the Bold? Wasn't that supposed to be the vehicle for something like that?
Not really, because it was. I mean, you don't want something that says this week here's the Aquaman, and we'll get to him again in 6 issues or something. You want something where Aquaman is enough in every issue.
Okay.
That he's enough of a player, enough of a presence intertwined with everything else, to where if you like 2 or 3 of these characters, and let's face it, the characters we're talking are all...
They're A-list, yeah, they are.
They're the bottom of the A-list, the top of the B-list. They're on the bubble. They can almost but not quite support a title. So you get a bunch of them together, that's enough of a draw for most people to try out the book.
Yeah. And I would have liked it more than Countdown, that's for sure.
Countdown is, train wreck. But, I mean, if you like Hawkman, you like Firestorm, you like the Atom, maybe you'll get attached to Aquaman. Maybe you won't, but you'll have had the chance to do so.
Right.
You build
up. And it's not like in your face either.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's something that would have stronger momentum, stronger carryover than Aquaman going back into the Justice League or Aquaman showing up wherever, you know, in the Outsiders or wherever they would want to toss him. The problem with Brave and the Bold in terms of this is it's a once-a-month book. A character comes in for an issue and then goes out. Mm-hmm. It's barely even a sampler title.
Right, right.
Now, that's one thing that I think Trinity is started to do a good job with. I'm not sure they've really kind of kept up with that, where first issue kind of introduced you to the Flash, the next one to Green Lantern, then the Justice League. And then the next 2 or 3 to the Justice League, and then the next one to the Justice League.
Yeah.
You know, in theory, over the course of however long Trinity runs, and I'm not even sure how long that is.
Well, it's going to be 52 issues.
Okay. They would have time to head to El Paso, see Blue Beetle, to head and go, you know, hang with the Justice Society for a little bit. You know, go bump into, you know, all of the other solo, you know, Booster Gold, Flash, Supergirl, everyone else, they've already done Flash. You know what I mean, though, the Titans, the various Batman-related characters, to kind of use that as a sampler title, you know, and potentially get people at least introduced to these other characters. But you see a character for an issue, unless that character is brilliantly written and utterly fascinating, it's not going to get readers to go pick up that book. Mm-hmm. Where, again, if they took a handful of characters with the intent of, we want every one of these to be viable leading characters for a solo book after the fact, and had a writer going in with that mindset, saying, at the end, here are the titles you could wind up launching if you want. And, again, I think somebody like Dwayne McDuffie is the perfect choice for that. And there are a number of other choices, of course. That's how I think DC, could recapture interest in some of these bubble characters and get them going. You know, again, you would need again Trinity with Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman as the keys. You know, or the hook could have worked that way, but I mean, realistically, you know, the first issue of Trinity did 70,400 units, and Bob and I will talk about this a bit later on, about a week or two actually, when we talk about the comics. That's not a bad start, but then it dropped by the fourth issue down to 5,800,729 units. So four issues in, it's already under 60,000 units. You know, how many people is that really going to hook? Now, granted, that's more than most DC titles, but, you know, it's a matter of where is DC trying to go, how do they want to position their characters, and, you know, what's the most effective way of doing that?
Right, right.
You know, I don't understand what the goal in terms of the publishing plan is for Trinity. Obviously, they're telling an entertaining story, and that's a goal in and of itself. But do they have an exit strategy for this? And that's where I thought 52 and Countdown really differed. 52 mm-hmm. had a clear exit strategy. I think they fumbled the ball on that. Mm-hmm. But Booster Gold launched successfully out of that. They could have launched a very successful Black Adam, Marvel family kind of title out, or Shazam family, I should say, I guess. Title out of that.
Well, no, there's a good point. There's been a number of miniseries. You get the Trials of Shazam, which has taken forever because it's coming out at once every 2 months. But then also Black Adam had his little miniseries.
I would have taken both of those. I would have done them as intertwined stories in a Birds of Prey style series focusing on the Fawcett characters.
Yeah, all the Fawcett characters, right, yeah.
Yeah, I'd have brought in, you know...
You get Bullet Man in there.
Or Bulleteer is the replacement, but yeah.
Yeah.
You know, all of those kinds of characters. Now, granted, a few of them are getting used elsewhere, like Spy Smasher in Birds of Prey, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But you could have had a very strong ongoing title out of that versus two fairly strong limited series and now nothing.
Yeah.
You know, but out of Countdown, there was really nothing that I ever saw as a viable ongoing out of it. Now, should that be the goal of the series? On the one hand, no. It should be self-contained, should have a nice ending, etc. I'm all for that. But this goes back to a point I tried to make a while back in one of my articles on comic book resources about transient sales. It doesn't matter how much somebody likes Trinity. When it ends, they stop buying it because there's no more to get.
Mm-hmm.
Can you then transition those sales into other titles? Because if you cannot, the creator, the publisher, and the retailer have all lost those sales. And, you know, to me, that's part of why sales have been skewing downwards, is so many things are, well, let's do an 8-issue series for Adam Strange, or... I'm trying to think of a good Marvel example. I'm sure there are a couple, but I'm blanking. You know what I mean, though? A short mini-series. Okay, that does okay. Maybe they followed up something. Maybe they don't. And if they don't, again, sales lost, end of story, literally. We've gotten to the point where the never-ending battle is now for sales, not for justice.
Mm-hmm.
Because even with the ongoing titles, you tend to compartmentalize them into... very clear trade paperback chunks with a good jumping off point at the end of each. So when I see things like Captain America that don't have that and really pull me from issue to issue to issue to issue, I got to applaud that and I got to point that out.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I've been rambling, haven't I?
Nah, you're fine. How many issues do you think Agents of Atlas will last?
Not enough. I'm really glad to see that's getting its own series. It took a while. I don't know that the sales figures for the limited series totally justified it, but I think it's one that, if given a chance to grow an audience, can and will.
Mm-hmm.
And I certainly hope it gets that chance.
Yeah, I hope so, too.
I'm really looking forward to it. It's one that I recommend people pick up that hardcover.
Oh, absolutely.
I still need to pick up the hardcover. I got the individual issues, so I've been dragging my feet.
Oh, go pick it up.
I know, I know.
$15 and in-stock trades.
I may have to... I have to do that.
Well worth it, yep.
I'll see how my order for the next previews comes out, and if it's not too bad, I'll toss that in.
Yeah.
So, anything else on the list really jump out at you as a, oh, wow, got to mention this?
No, I covered all the ones I wanted to talk about. Anything else from you?
Well, we mentioned that Buffy was on there. Let's see. The first Why the Last Man trade showed up at rank 95 with 1,403 units, so... That's 1403. It may not be getting that hardcover. So
they just don't know about it yet.
That could be. Well, and also it makes sense to have the full stock of trades in there because people may see that hardcover and say, I don't want to spend that much. Do you have it in trade? And, oh, wow, you've got all 10, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, the other one thing I want to mention is a couple of weeks back, Brian Hibbs did his column on comic book resources, Tilting at Windmills, and he was talking about how he looked at the point of sales system information he had for his store for the last year and looked at what trades had and hadn't moved and how he was going to be adjusting both the stock he hangs on to and what he orders accordingly. Fascinating article, and basically it really kind of illustrated how with a good point of sales system that you can just have a much better grasp of you know, what you may think is selling but really isn't, mm-hmm. and vice versa. So anyone who's interested in the discussions we have every month on this, the discussions I have with Bob every month on the comics side, I really recommend checking out Brian Hibbs' Tilting at Windmills column on comic book resources. And they just started a new column called Retails, kind of of behind-the-counter experiences of one retailer and stuff. Because if you're into the sales stuff, you want the big picture and want to see all this other stuff. And there's a lot of good information to be had. So that's pretty much it for me. Bob and I will be talking about the comic books. We're not going to be doing it. Let's see, this will air on Friday. Next Monday is the weekly comic spotlight. Next Wednesday is the preview spotlight. Friday is the previews spotlight interview. The following Monday is the weekly spotlight, because, again, we do that every Monday, like weekly, you know. Mm-hmm. So it'll either be probably that Wednesday, so about a week and a half from when this episode is downloaded. And hopefully everybody's listening to it the minute it comes down, because I know they're just riveted by this. No, they're not. That's when the comics discussion will happen. Again, it's a little later in the month than usual just because this stuff came out right after I left for San Diego. So it took me about a week or two to get the numbers crunched, get them out, and that kind of stuff. So sorry for
the
delay.
We'll be doing the July one rather quickly then.
Yeah, probably a week after next.
Yeah, we can do that.
So as soon as I get the stuff, I'll let you know and we'll talk about it because there's always good stuff to talk about with the trades. You know that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I've got my show coming out this week, and it's going to be on the New Frontier, Darwin Cook. I'm going to be going over the Absolute version and the DVD and the deluxe DVD and also the extras in the special one-shot that was put out a few months back, going over all things New Frontier.
Cool. Should be
and
fun.
And then I'm taking a week off, man. No podcast.
You're taking a week off?
It's my summer vacation. That's right. I did it last year, and I'm doing it again this year.
Wow.
Yeah. Much needed break.
Yeah, understandable. Understandable.
So plus, I'm just going to be out of town and won't be able to do one.
You could always do one early and you know, post-date it or whatever.
Oh, no. I don't like doing that. I want to catch up on my reading is what I want to do.
Oh, so. God. You and me both.
I know.
I tell you, San Diego's fun, but it puts me behind on my reading.
Oh, I'm so far behind. It's unreal how far behind I am.
I was caught up, and now I'm almost 100 comics behind. So, but okay, so I think that pretty much wraps this up.
That'll do it.
Cool. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by John Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there's at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust that needs collecting.
The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50.5 or SKUs and items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which, as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and/or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and English language itself seem to work very differently there.